Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Christian Research Institute President Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we present another episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Professor Melissa Kane Travis, author of Science and the Mind of the Maker, What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged, the podcast that brings some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet directly to you. You get to listen in to some of the most incredible conversations, and today is no exception. Today, I'm going to have a conversation with Melissa Kane Travis. She serves as an assistant professor of Christian apologetics at Houston Baptist University, and she is, and this is really exciting for us at the Christian Research Institute, she's a contributing writer for the Christian Research Journal, our award-winning magazine. By the way, if you have not subscribed to the magazine, you can remedy that woeful condition on the web at equip.org. Melissa is pursuing a PhD in humanities, focusing on the history and philosophy related to scientific and mathematical thought in the Western tradition and contemporary scholarship. She's earned the Master of Arts in Science and Religion from Biola University. She's graduated that program with highest honors. She is certified in Christian apologetics by Biola and holds a Bachelor of Science in General Biology from Campbell University. She was featured alongside her colleagues in the April 2015 cover story of Christianity Today. And she has worked as a bench scientist in the fields of biotechnology and pharmaceutical research after obtaining her undergraduate degree, and has spent more than a decade exploring the science, theology, and philosophy related to the origins debate. And on top of all of that, Melissa is the author of a brand new book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God. It is one of our featured resources during the month of June 2018. And so with all of that, I am absolutely delighted to have you on the podcast, Melissa.
Thank you, Hank. I'm so honored to be speaking with you, and I appreciate the invitation.
I had an opportunity to interview Holly Ordway and Nancy Piercy, a couple of your colleagues, and they were incredible.
Oh, I'm sure.
I heard that you got a chance to listen to Nancy Piercy on the podcast.
I did. I'm such an admirer of Nancy, and I'm just honored to be her colleague at HBU. She has done such phenomenal work for Christendom, and I have to admit that I particularly appreciate the fact that she's a fellow woman fighting the good fight.
Yeah, you know, you have Nancy Piercy, you have Holly, you have Mary Jo Sharp, you've got Kristen Davis, and when I thought about the five of you, I thought about the contrast between the four horsemen of the new atheism, you know, Dawkins and Hitchens and Harris and Dennett, and what I'm now dubbing the five female superheroes of the neo-apologetics movement.
Oh, I love that. We need a comic book.
You do need a comic book. Collectively, you guys are proof. You're proof positive that women in general and mothers in particular are among the most influential ambassadors in the church in developing, reproducing disciple makers today. I think the significance of the hand that rocks the cradle on apologetics and evangelists can't be overstated.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think many who have followed the apologetics world for the past few decades are starting to realize that. We've gone from hearing comments about, well, where are all the women in the discipline, to hearing gracious comments such as yours about, wow, we finally have women in the discipline, and look how incredible this is, especially in influencing other women, particularly mothers, to help raise their kids with a reasonable faith.
Yeah, we've been conditioned to think that apologetics is the exclusive domain of men, And now we can say with certainty that's not the case.
Yes, exactly.
Talk about the importance of mothers teaching their children the essentials of the historic Christian faith. I mean, I am the father of 12 children, seven girls, and they are incredible apologists in their own right. But a lot of that comes from a mother teaching the children the essentials of the Christian faith.
Yes, absolutely. And when I have conversations with other moms, other homeschool moms in particular, I often sense a great deal of intimidation because they feel as if they need to have formal training in apologetics or read huge stacks of books on the topic in order to be able to teach their children. And what I love being able to tell them is that's absolutely not the case. Think about just having good conversations with your kids about the hard questions surrounding Christianity. And 9 times out of 10, when I'm having these kinds of conversations with fellow moms, it is because they've approached me in a little bit of a panic in response to hearing one of those challenging questions from one of their children. Because often our kids start asking these mind-blowing questions at a much younger age than we expect them to. My older son, who's now turning 15, started asking me questions about the existence of God when he was only 7 years old. And I know that it wasn't inspired by interaction with peers because his only peers were in his little Sunday school class at church at that stage of his life. So this was coming from his own little 7-year-old intellect. And that was a wake-up call day for me because it made me realize that there are lots of moms out there who probably don't know how to handle these kinds of questions. They're underprepared, and they're not doing as good of a job as they actually could do with just a little bit of informal training and self-study. So I like to think of myself as an encourager to those moms out there.
Yeah, and you think about the essentials of the historic Christian faith. I mean, this is what we hang together on. I've said this in various podcasts and broadcasts, quoting Benjamin Franklin, if we don't hang together, we're going to hang separately. And it's important that we do hang together based on the essentials of the historic Christian faith. And those are essentials that can be internalized and then passed on to our children.
Yes, absolutely.
You make the argument in an article in the Christian Research Journal, the article's titled "What the Size of the Cosmos Doesn't Say About Mankind," but you make the argument that pop science journalism today supposes that the unraveling of geocentrism underscores the so-called Copernican principle, the principle of mediocrity. In other words, if Earth is not a privileged planet, we hear that then human beings that inhabit Earth must not be privileged either. And that's an argument that has to be dealt with today, particularly when you have people like Bill Nye, the science guy, saying, I'm insignificant, I'm just another speck of sand, and the Earth really, in the cosmic scheme of things, is just another speck, and the sun, an unremarkable star, and the galaxy is a speck, and I'm therefore a speck on a speck, orbiting a speck among other specks, among still other specks in the middle of specklessness. And therefore, says Bill Nye, I suck. Talk about how flawed that reasoning is.
So lest anyone say, well, I don't respect Bill Nye as a competent science personality, and I've heard plenty of non-theists make that statement about Bill Nye, we're also hearing very similar comments come from eminent scientists who have become popular public personalities, such as Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who was actually the host of the Cosmos miniseries reboot that came out just a couple years ago and which is entering its second season next year. So there's this idea, as you said, that because we are so small in relation to the rest of the universe, because there's so many billions or trillions of other stars and galaxies and planets out there, then that has to mean that we, by comparison, are insignificant. So the flaw in the reasoning there is that it assumes that value or significance is based on the physical size of something. And that's simply ridiculous. We could use many real-world examples to counteract that very idea. And I believe in the article I use the example of human people. So we would never say that a 50-year-old is more significant than a 5-month-old or a 5-year-old, right? It's that we are significant and valuable by virtue of the kind of thing we are. So the size of the cosmos in relation to the size of our home planet or the size of a human person is completely irrelevant. But we keep hearing this silly argument promoted over and over and over again.
Yeah, you wrote another article for the Christian Research Journal. It's called A Grand Cosmic Resonance, How the Structure and Comprehensibility of the Universe Reveal a Mindful Maker. And I oftentimes say, quoting my good friend Oz Guinness, that contrast is the mother of clarity. You mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson. He speculates that the universe just popped into existence out of nothing or is just a computer simulation. On the other hand, you have noted intellects like Albert Einstein who recognize that the materialist view of nature is inadequate for explaining why we live in a universe that is fundamentally mathematical and comprehensible. In other words, Einstein, unlike Tyson, saw the marks of intelligence in the natural order and therefore reasonably supposed that there must be something more to the world than mere matter and motion.
Right. And unfortunately, we never get a super explicit statement from Einstein affirming the existence of a creator God, much less a God who's intimately involved in the affairs of mankind, which is sad. But he hedges right up against it so many times in his writings. He would often say things about the mind or the intelligence behind or pervading the cosmos. He would compare nature to a grand library full of rational information that we're just scratching the surface of. And one of my favorite all-time statements from Albert Einstein was when he said, "It is a miracle that the universe is comprehensible." And if you unpack that statement, you figure out that it really is quite miraculous that the world is structured in such a way that it can be comprehended through the advanced mathematics of theoretical physics, for example. But not only that, but here we are creatures who are equipped with a fine-tuned rationality that can actually do the advanced mathematics of theoretical physics. So there's this wonderful correlation between the mind of man and the physical world such that the scientific enterprise is even possible in the first place.
Yeah, what you say about Albert Einstein is absolutely true. And the point here, though, is that here you have Einstein recognizing that there has to be some sort of intelligence, whether he's a pantheist or whatever his philosophy is, he recognizes intelligence, which is something that Neil deGrasse Tyson won't recognize. He rather defers to this, I think, very obscurantist notion that the universe just popped into existence out of nothing.
Right, right. He believes that something as rational as what we observe, and then human rationality included as a product of that inherent rationality, is just a cosmic accident. So rationality from non-rationality.
And I was reading a quote by British physicist Paul Davies in your article. Obviously, he's very, very famous, well-known, about how true it is that first we determine, as I was thinking about this as I was reading that article, first we determine our paradigms and then our paradigms determine us. In other words, we only see what our paradigms allow us to see. And I think perhaps that explains why Davies, although a very, very brilliant guy, can say that mindless, blundering atoms have conspired to make not just life, not just mind, but make understanding. So his predispositions happen to prohibit him from seriously considering the alternative of intelligence. And so we have to re-examine our paradigms, and I think this is one of the arguments we have to make when we're talking to people in general. You have to examine your paradigm because your paradigm only allows you to see what your paradigm allows you to see. So you're not thinking about your paradigm, you're thinking with your paradigm.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis. Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true. The cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI during the financially crucial month of June and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. We'll be right back with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man.
Don't change that dial, exchange that dial. In our post-truth age of confusion, the need for Christians to be equipped with answers has never been greater. The Christian Research Institute exists to provide those answers, and you can access the Bible Answer Man broadcast whenever you want it, wherever you want it. In addition to listening to the broadcast live on air, you can also listen to the Bible Answer Man in many other ways. Listen to the Bible Answer Man by visiting our website at equip.org, by downloading the Equip app, or in podcast form by going to iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Now you can enjoy the Bible Answer Man broadcast whenever you want and continue to be equipped with answers wherever you are. Just remember, don't change that dial, exchange that dial. Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. The role that listeners like you have played in CRI's ministry has always been vital. Now it could well be more critical than ever. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June to ensure that we end the financial year in a position of strength. To make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Professor Melissa Kane Travis, in their conversation.
You have to examine your paradigm because your paradigm only allows you to see what your paradigm allows you to see. So you're not thinking about your paradigm, you're thinking with your paradigm.
Yes, that's exactly right. The committed naturalist won't, to use the famous quote, allow a divine foot in the door. As far as they're concerned, supernaturalism or theism in general is completely out of the question, and therefore, no matter what kind of observations are made about the material world, they will not even consider the realm of possibilities that include the existence of God or supernatural power. So they rule it out a priori before even looking at the evidence. So I guess a good way to think of it is they're limiting the size of their intellectual toolbox rather than saying, well, let's take an honest look at things and see how things are pointing. Are the findings of science pointing beyond themselves to a higher explanation, or are they not? But if you're ruling out the very possibility, then that's a question you don't even get to ask in the first place.
Yeah, you know, I love the even-handedness of your approach because you've also pointed out that there are atheist philosophers, Thomas Nagel comes to mind, who is willing to bite the bullet and admit that his rejection of theistic explanations of the world are based entirely on prejudice. I mean, he famously said, I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that. So he is biting the bullet. He's recognizing that his predisposition against God is based on a philosophical prejudice as opposed to a scientific argument.
Yes, precisely. So he is one of the very few that I can say are quite honest in their evaluation of the situation we find ourselves in from a cosmic perspective. His book, Mind and Cosmos, is an outstanding example of this, where he talks about the grave insufficiency of Darwinian naturalism to explain what we observe in the world. And so that book has been a huge boon to the project of Christian apologetics because he makes such great arguments and he's making them from the perspective of an atheist. But just like you say, he isn't willing to go all the way to theism, and he is honest about the fact that that's because of his philosophical pre-commitments. He prefers instead to speculate about some as yet to be discovered principle behind the universe that makes it tend towards increasing complexity and rationality.
I would imagine that it is comforting for someone like yourself to be free to consider the reality of a personal cosmic mind as the explanation for the exquisite three-part harmony that you've codified in your article, mathematics, human mind, the material world, as opposed to being forced to accept the mindless alternative.
It is. It's so much more intellectually satisfying because under the naturalistic paradigm, you're just left with this set of brute facts that have no explanation and will not ever have an explanation because these essentially are not questions that can be answered with additional scientific research. At bottom, they're metaphysical questions about our scientific observation. So the naturalist is just stuck in this rut of meaninglessness and lack of full explanation, whereas the person open to theism has this whole other spectrum of options to pull from. And we are free to say, wow, it seems very much as if mind, rather than blind matter and energy, is the fundamental truth behind the universe.
You alluded to this earlier in pointing out that if you're a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old, it doesn't matter. You have intrinsic value because you are stamped with the imago Dei. You're stamped with the image and likeness of God. And I think that makes all the difference in the world, because you have a person like Stephen Hawking, who recently died. He was very, very dogmatic in saying that we're just an advanced breed of monkeys on a minor planet of a very average star. Now, if you say that we're an advanced breed of monkeys, you leave open the door for the notion that there are advanced monkeys and there are less advanced monkeys, which is precisely what Darwinism presupposed. I mean, Darwin presupposed a gradation of human races and the lead up to those human races, and therefore he would make statements not only about race, which are hard to repeat in polite company, but also about gender. He would say that a woman can never attain to the eminence of a man in anything she does simply because of her gender. And yet, Darwinists today, they try to separate themselves from it in some cases, but oftentimes he still becomes the icon, the hero. And I find that so interesting in an age of political correctness, in an age in which you can't even make a mistake in a tweet without being absolutely bludgeoned for it. And in a lot of cases, that's exactly what ought to happen, because we ought to never make a racist comment. I mean, it isn't part of the Christian worldview. It isn't part of what Western civilization ought to be about. But yet you have a paradigm that is, as I would look at it, at least, Melissa, implicitly racist.
Yes, I think that's an excellent point. If we are going to insist that all human beings are created equal, have equal worth, dignity, and value, then we must have a universal standard in which we're grounding that statement. And if we are not purposefully made in the image of God, that by virtue of our humanity, we are objectively valuable, then there is nothing by which to base this idea of equal value and dignity of human people. And so Darwin was basically being consistent in his view. If we are all nothing more than our biology, and we have certain people that exhibit what we might call preferable biology to another group of people, then that's all we have to go on when comparing them and deciding, well, who's more valuable than whom. So the materialist finds themselves in a very tough spot when it comes to this. J.P. Moreland joked one time, what are we going to do? Say everyone that has a belly button is equally valuable and just judge human value on belly buttons? And he talked about how ridiculous that idea was, but he said it to make the point that we need something much more intrinsic and something that transcends biology in which to ground human value.
I mean, you have luminaries today in the evolutionary community, like Darwin, like Huxley, Thomas Huxley, who, by the way, famously said that no rational man cognizant of the facts believes that the average Negro is the equal, still less the superior, of the white man. It is simply incredible to think, he said, that he would be able to compete successfully with his bigger brain, smaller jawed rival in a contest which is to be carried on by thoughts and not by bites. And he's not alone. I mean, I think back to David Hume. I mean, he's spoken of in the most glowing terms by people today. I mean, he was an empiricist philosopher, and a lot of people laud him, but he went as far as to say that blacks are naturally inferior to whites. And as I mentioned, with respect to Darwin, he talked about the preservation of favored races in the struggle for life. And when he was talking about races, he was not merely talking about individuals within races. All of this is simply to say, Melissa, I think at some point, this is an argument that should be set forth. I mean, we have to do it with gentleness and with respect, but I think it's an argument that's worth making.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And we can point to things like the eugenics movement in Europe and in America in the early 20th century, this idea that we needed to weed out the undesirables or the unfit or the imbeciles of society and purify the human race. Of course, that was behind a lot of the thinking of Nazi Germany. You know, the quote-unquote lower races or the quote-unquote useless eaters of society had to be weeded out because human beings were being looked upon as nothing more than biological machines. And if evolution was going to progress and man improve, then we had to cleanse the gene pool. So we can point to these just incredible atrocities of our pretty recent history to show the impact that consistent Darwinian thinking has had on society.
So how important is it for us as apologists to push these arguments to their logical conclusion? Because a lot of people would be horrified, even philosophical naturalists, atheists would be horrified at the logical conclusions that oftentimes they've never considered.
I think it's very important. I think we have to be persistent and keep doing it. There is always pushback. There's always pushback from the Darwinian materialists who say, just because I'm a Darwinian materialist does not mean that I'm in favor of all the social projects that have been done in the name of Darwinism. And that's a fair point, but what they need to understand is that the logical conclusion of their view yields those kinds of things. So if they want to hold their view, they can hold their view, but they need to know that they're being inconsistent.
I want to talk a little bit about your new book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, subtitled What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God. In that book, you have a moniker. It's called the Maker Thesis. What does that explain?
Okay, so I hint very strongly to the Maker Thesis in the article that just came out in CRJ, A Grand Cosmic Resonance. So the idea behind the Maker Thesis is that the enormous success of the scientific enterprise that we have watched unlock many of nature's secrets strongly implies the existence of a maker. And not only does it strongly imply the existence of a maker, but it implies one who desires to share some of his mind with the creatures. And we would say that because we're made in his image is the reason we are able to share in his mind.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth and receive as our thanks for your gift a copy of Melissa Kane Travis's essential new book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God. Simply call 888-7000-CRI during the financially crucial month of June and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker Thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. Don't change that dial, exchange that dial. In our post-truth age of confusion, the need for Christians to be equipped with answers has never been greater. The Christian Research Institute exists to provide those answers, and you can access the Bible Answer Man broadcast whenever you want it, wherever you want it. In addition to listening to the broadcast live on air, you can also listen to the Bible Answer Man in many other ways. Listen to the Bible Answer Man by visiting our website at equip.org, by downloading the Equip app, or in podcast form by going to iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Now you can enjoy the Bible Answer Man broadcast whenever you want and continue to be equipped with answers wherever you are. Just remember, don't change that dial, exchange that dial.
You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Have you ever thought about why the universe is fundamentally mathematical and comprehensible, and why the human mind is capable of apprehending it? In her new book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis shows that it's unreasonable to expect that minds, which have allegedly evolved by purposeless natural selection to be fit for survival and reproduction, would be suitably equipped to grasp the complexities of modern science. Rather, the structure of nature and the human mind have a peculiar resonance with the mind of the Maker. Receive your copy of Science and the Mind of the Maker when you call 888-7000-CRI during the financially crucial month of June and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis.
So the idea behind the Maker Thesis is that the enormous success of the scientific enterprise that we have watched unlock many of nature's secrets strongly implies the existence of a maker. And not only does it strongly imply the existence of a maker, but it implies one who desires to share some of his mind with the creatures. And we would say that because we're made in his image is the reason we are able to share in his mind. So from what we observe, it looks very much as if one of the main goals of the development of the natural world was the existence of rational beings who could investigate its deep structure. And as we investigate the deep structure, we thereby understand something of the mind that seems to be behind it all. Turns out that there are features of the universe in general, and then there are features of planet Earth in particular, that make man's home incredibly hospitable to the scientific enterprise. And to go along with that, we have the kind of minds that are suited to carry out that kind of investigation. And this coincides very well with the Christian doctrine we mentioned earlier of the Imago Dei, the idea that mankind is not just a creation, he is the crown of creation made in the image of God. And as such, we're endowed with these cognitive faculties that allow us to have not just moral awareness, but also higher rationality. So I think using the word resonance, as I do in the CRJ article, is perfect for describing this crazy situation we find ourselves in. There was a 4th century Alexandrian bishop named St. Athanasius, and he's one of my absolute favorite Christian saints. I love reading his work. And he used this analogy that always comes to my mind when I'm thinking about the cosmic resonance behind the maker thesis. He said, like a musician who has tuned his lyre and by the artistic blending of low and high and medium tones produces a single melody, so the wisdom of God, holding the universe like a lyre, adapting things heavenly to things earthly, and earthly things to heavenly, harmonizes them all, and leading them by his will, makes one world and one world order in beauty and harmony. And I just love that. I think it's so appropriate to the thesis of my book that when we observe the world and we observe our own nature, we see this incredible resonance that leads us to understand that there is a maker whose mind we are able to tap into just a little bit when we carry out the natural sciences.
I love that you quoted Athanasius. It reminds me of the power of one. I mean, if you think about Athanasius in the 4th century, it was Athanasius contra mundum. It was Athanasius against the world. He was willing to stand against Arianism, and his arguments ended up winning the day. And I also love the fact that he overtly said what many have said throughout the centuries, that God became man so that man might become God. Now, he did not mean that we can become as God is by nature. We are gods by grace. We participate, as Peter said, in the divine nature. But he opened a door which points out just how special we are. We are so special that God has invited us into fellowship within the Trinity. I mean, it's incredible to think that the one who spoke and the universe leapt into existence wants that kind of a relationship with us, a relationship that brings us into the fellowship of the triune God.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And many of the church fathers talked about this very same thing. They talked about how nature is like this grand book. And because we're made in the image of God, we can read that book. We can discern some of his wisdom and power in the things that he has made.
And we think about the Bible, rightly so. I've spent a lifetime memorizing the Bible. But there's also, as you just point out, Melissa, there is the book of nature, and we can see God's imprimatur. We can see his fingerprints on the universe that he has created.
Yes. These arguments actually go pretty far back. They even predate the existence of Christianity. We see roots of these ideas in ancient Greek philosophy, most particularly Plato, and then by 1st century BC, 1st century AD Judaism, we see these ideas about a creator having resonance with the mind of man absorbed into, or I guess a better word would be inspiring, the writings of Judaism, such that the extrinsic Platonic forms that in Greek philosophy just kind of exist out there somewhere are now placed in the mind of a creator God as the pattern that God used to create the universe. And then our early church fathers come along and we see the appearance of this wonderful metaphor about the book of nature, the idea that the creation is this communication vehicle by which God reveals himself to mankind. So they saw creation as a natural revelation that could be used in tandem with the special revelation that we find in Scripture. They saw those two in complete harmony and actually synergy, because they thought that by observing the world, we better understand Scripture, and by reading Scripture, we better understand what we're seeing in the world. And then, of course, we see these ideas communicated in both the Old and New Testament. Psalm 19 is a famous one where we read that the heavens declare the glory of God and they send a message to all the earth. And then in Romans 1:20, St. Paul tells us that God's power and wisdom are so clearly seen in what has been made that mankind is without excuse when it comes to knowing and worshiping him, the creator of all things. And so in the book that I have coming out, what I've tried to do is weave together this glorious intellectual history with the most up-to-date findings of science and the most up-to-date progress in philosophy, and show how these very ancient arguments have not been debunked by the rise of modern science. They've, in fact, been truly vindicated by modern science.
As you were speaking, I was thinking about a quote that I saw in your book, and I actually used it as the quote of the day in the Bible Answer Band broadcast. It was from one of my heroes, Cicero, first century BC. And the reason he's one of my heroes is I used to teach memory for years and years and years, and he was a memory expert, and he laid out some of the principles of mnemonics before the time of Christ. But the quote in your book, "What can be so obvious and clear," said Cicero, "as we gaze up at the sky and observe the heavenly bodies, as that there is some divine power of surpassing intelligence by which they are ordered." Here you have an ancient pagan philosopher recognizing intelligence in creation.
Yes, absolutely. Cicero is one of my favorites too. And I actually discovered in reading Cicero a couple of years ago that he has been totally ripped off by some in the intelligent design community. And I say that very lightheartedly, not to actually point a finger. But you often hear this analogy used in intelligent design literature about detecting intelligence through something called specified complexity. And sometimes the writer will say, imagine taking a handful of Scrabble letters and tossing them up in the air. And when they land down on the table, they spell out a sentence. Now, you wouldn't think that that was by sheer chance. You would think there was something undetectable at work to bring about this information created by the Scrabble tiles. Well, so I'm reading Cicero a couple of years ago, and he's actually the one that came up with that argument, though I've never seen him credited with it. He said, imagine that you have tiles with the alphabet inscribed on them, and they spell out communication. He said, if you saw that, just like we gaze up into the regularities of the celestial bodies in the heavens, so should we see that this ordering is a sign of a higher intelligence behind the world. And I thought that was awesome.
That is awesome. You know, here's a myth that needs to be exploded. The idea that as our understanding of nature has grown, warrant for theistic explanations is shrinking. That's a myth. It's a myth that needs to be exploded.
Oh, it absolutely is. And it's interesting to be in conversation with those that try to promote that myth, because very often they're just using talking points learned on the internet or talking points they've learned from pop atheist literature, and they've never thought about it deeply, and they've never considered the breadth of the knowledge and the breadth of the contributions that the Christian worldview has made to things like the scientific enterprise, for example. So you're exactly right. It's a myth that needs to be dispelled.
Now, you just put your finger on something that I want you to explore a little bit with me, and that is the whole idea of thinking. We no longer think. We pick up bits of information and parrot that information. I'm speaking in a general sense, of course. We parrot that information as opposed to thinking deeply. And part of that is the staccato nature of our culture. I mean, we're getting information at such a rapid pace that we never really get a chance to digest it. I mean, I watch television shows all the time. The interviews are increasingly short. You're coming up to a station break, and then you're on to something else. And because of that rapid fire, people don't get a chance to really think or ponder these very significant issues. So what do you do about that? What do you do as you are working to teach your children or other people? How do you teach them to actually process information, to think deeply about things in an age in which we are being bombarded with information but not really processing it?
That's a great question. It's something that I think about a lot. I was reflecting the other day on the fact that the public school system no longer, if it ever did require, I'm assuming at one time that it did, but at least now they do not require someone to master basic logic before they graduate from high school, which is a tragedy. And that's at the root of a lot of our problem today, I think.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in tomorrow when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank would like to send you Science and the Mind of the Maker, What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God by Melissa Kane Travis. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker Thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.